horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
Very good Wednesday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebeck.com. And last morning, last day here in the Ville. And as always, it's bittersweet. Although I will tell you this, I was driving in and talk to Woodbury Payne, who, of course, we'll see in Nashville tomorrow and through Saturday for the Iroquois. And I said, you know, he said, a little bit more relaxed now. And I said, you know what? This will be, I think, a regular occurrence. I very much have enjoyed decompressing a little bit post Derby. The intensity involved is, it's, you know, five alarms, no doubt about it. General quarters, the broodmare sire of two fills. the thank yous, I suppose I should get these in now while I got a chance. I think this morning, Kevin Kirstein's in, so we'll get a chance to have a final send-off with KK. You want to talk about a bit of a hangover around, you know, around the facility. There's still plenty of cleanup going on. I think even, you know, even into tomorrow and the card tomorrow. There's actually looked ahead, and it's a, you know, I know people think, well, the Derby's over and we got to wait a week to get to Baltimore, but there's a lot going on. Monmouth, of course, opens, and so we'll do it tomorrow. We'll do a little Monmouth previewing, and Prairie Meadows as well kicks off this weekend. So the, you know, the shifting sands of the wagering menu and, you know, the options out there as we, you know, transition into full-fledged spring, arcing toward summer racing. Meanwhile, the continuing stories, I'll get to a few, including one that that's one that was old enough to go to daycare, but I've got a different spin on it, I think. The back to the gratitudes, because I always end up by the end of the show, you know, with a foot on my throat, trying to get everything wrapped up. Thanks to everybody that was part of the coverage, and it's always amazing. People love this event. For all the, you know, for all the best reasons, and, you know, the intrigue in figuring out, you know, 3-year-olds going this trip, and then when you add in the, you know, the unusual twist that the Japanese runners offered, it made, you know, it made this Derby pretty fascinating from a, you know, from a handicapping and wagering standpoint. And I want to get some of that. We really have not done enough yet wagering recapping. There's some great stories that are emerging. Do you see that story out of Oaklawn? The husband and wife, the couple, that the $115 ticket on that Derby, on the Derby City 6? $1.2 million, and they netted $770,000. Yeah, very cool. And all different levels. I mean, there were people thrilled. There were people just thrilled to have Mage, period, and bet them to win. You know, then there's, you know, the opportunity to, you know, build tickets around a different opinion, whether it was Angel of Empire. For me, it was Two Phils, and was actually able to cash a couple of, you know, medium-sized tickets by having Mage on a few in a box format. So that was okay. I actually missed the big opportunity. You know, I'm not a super effective bettor, and put together a ticket with Two Phils, Disarm, and Angel of Empire, which the 1-2-3 picks, and then used Mage and Mandarin Hero. those five, and an Exacta box and a Tri box. And of course, a super box. I mean, $120 super box brought back $15,000. But I just never play supers, ever. Almost, I can't count. I just can't count. I don't think on two hands the number of superfectas I've played over the years. And that's why we used to rely, particularly when it came to super tickets, on Johnny. That's Johnny D and Will Schwartz's approach. But anyway, I do want to get to some of the wagering successes. We'll talk to Dick Powell in a little bit after Rusty Arnold joins us in about 10 minutes. Rusty's getting on a plane, and so we'll get to Rusty to talk about his win, Red Carpet Ready. We got our makeup conversations with Mig and John White today. Seth Merrill later, hour three. And of course, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. And a lot for Hill & Dale to be happy about and excited about, to have Good Magic get a Derby winner in his first crop. So, very cool. And happy for John Sakura, who was... And it's not just, by the way, it's not just Good Magic either that's tearing up the... I shouldn't say tearing up the turf, tearing up the ovals, turf or dirt, whatever. It doesn't matter. But Army Mule and the all the young sires that John has brought to Alapa, Hill & Dale at Alapa. So we'll get Sid's take and talk about the prominent, most prominent success stories coming out from a pedigree standpoint as well. And, of course, you know, everybody's going to start assembling next week for Timonium and the two-year-old training sale there. To expect that's going to be a big sale. And we got to catch up, too, with the Irish team and get ready for the Gorsebridge sale as well in Ireland. We're encouraging people to check out. So, anyway. That's the lineup. I'll probably get another visit or two in as well. John White, Mig, Sid, Dick, Seth, Rusty, and more. All right. Forte continues to be in the news, and the story that seems that people are just breathless over, the reporting of a medication violation, going back to the hopeful for Forte. That literally a story that was apparent last fall. I mean, that I will not report rumors, but it was something that had been floating around, waiting for, you know, the Gaming Commission to do whatever they're going to do. It was being churned around in the, you know, the Gaming Commission processes. So if people are wondering why, you know, it hadn't come out, because it hadn't, in terms of the process that, you know, that they use. What is evident to me, at least, is the what the intention was of reporting the way it was presented. Does it occur to anybody that, I mean, considering that this thing has been, you know, churning through the Gaming Commission system for several months, why was it reported now? Or, you know, what, did anybody connect those dots? Because clearly, the hope was that the horse would run, win the Derby, and then be confronted with this. That's what the intention was. Period. That's what the hope was. Because any number of people who had heard the rumors, you don't report rumors, you report facts. So that's the only possible explanation for reporting, quote unquote, the rumor now. Waiting and hoping for the big gotcha. That's the intention. That's who you're dealing with that story. Connect those dots. We'll get to Rusty Arnold, who it's always fun to talk to. You want to talk about a cagey, a cagey operator. He does such a good job and made the determination that red carpet ready wasn't going to be a two-turn Oaks type, and pointed her for the eight bells. So this is a nice win for Rusty, who we may have to try back because he's getting on a flight at 10:30. So maybe he's going through security. Let me all right. So we will wait to see what Rusty. Maybe we'll get him. Let's go to Dick Powell first, because I don't want to get too far behind. Let's get Dick. It's perfect. Let me get Dick Powell on, and we'll come back around, hopefully, to Rusty. Watch, he'll call me back as soon as we start. I'm sure he's going to security. I think he's going somewhere fun, too, because I think he said he would be on a flight for what seemed like 5 hours, so we can maybe play 20 questions with Rusty to see where he's going on vacation, if that's what it is. Dick Powell, good morning.
Steve, good morning. It was an eventful weekend for me.
Talk about it. I got a feeling you did quite well.
Well, yes, but I get there Friday, and my neck goes out on me.
Oh, jeez.
And when my neck goes out of me, my head goes down. So trying to walk through 100,000 people without being able to see in front of you is quite the challenge. So I wound up in first aid, and they gave me a neck brace. I look like Gene Hackman and Get Shorty. Ray Bones had just visited me and picked the desk up. So I'm there. I watched the Oaks. I went out to dinner, and I told the people at dinner, listen, I'm on the AE list for tomorrow. I don't think I'm going to be able to go, which there was no way I could go. So I stayed back at the apartment and had a big TV and my laptop and my iPad to watch the Met game and the Knick game and racing and 14 races. And it was a lot of fun. I would have loved to have been, and I've been to derbies before, so I wasn't being denied anything, but somehow my neck went out for God knows what reason. And then I came home Sunday and the security line with TSA pre was an hour and a half from the time you check your bag.
I heard about this. I saw the video. Mike Joyce was on the, he was doing on the spot reporting about the airport tie up.
Yeah, so that didn't help the neck.
I went
for acupuncture yesterday, which was already scheduled, and I'm going back in today, and it's helped. So hopefully we get back on track. But that was the greatest plans of mice and men went asunder.
Nice. Well, at the good news is you had a good opinion. You, as I mentioned, in terms of top four selections, you were the only person that had Mage, you know, prominently included. How did you bet?
I needed Mage with Angel of Empire. So two fills who I couldn't pull the trigger on him. As much as I love Tapita to Dirt, that's a great angle. I couldn't see where that race came out of. That's going to lead to another discussion. But I just that race was kind of an anomaly compared to all those other races. And so, yes, it was Tapita, but how much of it was Tapita? How much was it an improving horse in the spring or three-year-old season? So that cost me. And I thought, so to say, exactly was $167 if it's Mage on top of Angel. And so two fills split me, and but I thought it was a riding clinic by Castellano, because I'm watching a race, and sometimes it's tough to watch the race the way it's covered. But Angel of Empire is in the far right of the screen, and Flavian has him down on the rail, which is kind of risky, but. And he's kind of riding him like a turf horse, which I don't like to see dirt horses ridden like turf horses. But he's in behind Asherson's horse, who was running well, so that it's not like his horse was backing up into me. But on the turn, from the half mile to the 3/8 pole, Flavian's trying to get out, and there's Castellano right next to him. So when Castellano makes his move to go to the outside, Flavian has to wait, come off heels, then he gets to go to the outside. Winning and losing, or the difference between finish and second, and me hitting an exact in 20 times. So I thought Castellano was brilliant. I thought Flavian made a mistake by staying down there and never giving himself enough space to get out. I know horses drift in the Derby, so being down is not the worst thing. But you're eating a lot of dirt, and horse was ready. Brad had his horse ready. Larry Rowley had his horse ready. And Mr. Degado, Senior and Junior, had their horse ready. So it's great. The three horses fired. Two fills was brilliant. I do not agree with anyone saying he moved too early. He moved when the hole was there.
You don't get to pick the hole. No, and the horse was moving the way he was moving. What are you going to do? You're gonna try to wrangle the horse? It's stupidity. That's idiotic.
Yes. I thought the kid rode him exactly the way he should have. I thought Castellano did everything right on Mage, and Flavian just had a little, maybe 100 yards where he's loaded and he doesn't have clear running because Castellano moved up next to him. And yeah, he didn't have him pinned to the rail, but Javier had horses in front of him, some of which were backing up. And then that two fills got through that congestion and suddenly was in the lead by a clear margin turning for home. So it was Angel of Empire, galloped out great. He looked great. I think he'll come back wherever he's going to come back, Belmont Stakes, whatever, and do extremely well. the two Phils was my, and it leads to an interesting discussion, Steve. We've had Justify, we've had this horse, no real two-year-old form, and even with Angel of Empire, my hesitancy with him was, why was he? He wasn't bad last year, but his numbers blossomed in the two starts this year compared to last year. So either, you know. So what I'm thinking is, considering how little these horses are on the track, is it a negative to be a mid-season two-year-old? And do we just like ignore issues that we used to look at in terms of foundation development, stuff like that, and basically just give way too much weight to the last one or two starts? I mean, that's how you get into the Derby with the points,
right?
And that seems to be working lately, that the development patterns, you just can't be, you got to have some flexibility with them, because they're not hard and fast as maybe they were for a long time.
The interesting thing too about the top pair, and as I maintained, since right after the race, I mean they were the only two horses that that had winning performances, and when it comes to Delgado, it's a testimony to the way in which he long galloped, slow galloped, stamina built Mage. And when it comes to Ravelli, it's a testimony, and he admitted yesterday, that he's not thought of. He said he had a very good distance horse earlier in his career, but that, his bread and butter is sprinting, and he's best known for, having successful sprinters, but his horsemanship came into play, being the horse with the most starts coming in, and he also gave him two serious pre-race, post turfway drills. Those two drills at Hawthorne were the kind of drills that we see from the most accomplished route trainer types in terms of a published 5 or 6 furlong work with mile and a 16th, mile and an 8th gallop outs. I mean, he handled this horse brilliantly, and good magic, you could argue is thought of as a little bit of a middle distance type, kind of in the into mischief mode, and it just shows that if these horses, people say, are they going to get the distance? Yeah, they'll all get the distance, but the ones that are trained for stamina, and that are accompanied by speed and a turn of foot, they're the ones who succeed in this race. You can't baby them into this race. You can't show up here with a short horse. You got to train them, these two horses were, just way better than the other 16.
Yeah, I love the Mage's pedigree, because he was dirt on dirt, and Puka, the dam, she broke her maiden by 16 lengths. And I remember when she did it, I thought, you don't see that every day. It was a wet track and all that. I think it was at Belmont. But she wins by a pole. So obviously there were great expectations for her. And she won a stake at Suffolk, as TD had pointed out last night, and stakes place a number of the times, winning high class allowance races, turf, dirt, all that. Big Brown wasn't the flavor of the month, but back then she was in his first crop. So he was getting good mares and all that. And then Good Magic, I loved him when he won Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He was a terrific three-year-old. He just unfortunately ran into Justified that year. And he's a Curlin, so Curlin counts for a lot these days, especially on dirt. So that pedigree was super strong. Someone asked me, well, how can you don't like Forte? I think I made that pretty clear on Thursday. Describing his workouts as awful and slow. All right, that was my opinion. But how do you like the horse who he beat? Well, to me, that's one reason why I did throw in Mage, because he clearly looked like a horse on the ascendancy, and I thought, regardless of what happened with the foot and everything, but I just thought Forte had shown all his cards. There was no leap of improvement where Mage had that possibility. And you and I know this, Steve. When you make the lead too early, it's not that you stop, you run out of gas, it's that you might lose focus, especially for an inexperienced horse. So in the Florida Derby, Mage made that great move, and suddenly he's in front, and not everyone knows what to do when they get in front. So that's a great experience for him. It's going to help him next time. So I thought his race was every bit as good as Forte's race, and I was way negative on Forte. And by the way, I'm sure you covered this during the week, but the Oaks Derby double, Angel of Empire was the favorite by about $10.
$57 or so, because I published it on my website. People always go looking for it. And, yeah, it was interesting how much money he had taken.
Yeah. So Forte was even before the drama Saturday morning, but there were rumors. They were going around. And so Angel of Empire was going to take money, and then McInville stepped in, and he dropped to 7-2, but he came back up, and him and Tappa Trice were battling for favoritism, and it was Angel of Empire as the, lukewarm favorite. And I thought he ran great, and as usual, Bray Cox showed up on a big day and had his horse ready to perform. Just did terrific. Just didn't quite get the trip where the other two won one saving ground, one losing ground. But if you're going to lose ground, you got to be clear. You can't have any traffic. You got to get the momentum going and just never have anything in your path. And that's what Castellano did. So it was good. And then Al Stahl comes out and wins race 13 with a serious horse, Bo Cruz. And he looked fantastic. So he's a horse to watch as the season goes on. General Jim. A lot of horses in the Preakness that are going to be intriguing. And,
I'm glad we're getting this in, too. You mentioned that Bo Cruz paid a little under $10. And actually on Friday, too, Al, was that Al's horse, too? And Huntress, whose horse was that Huntress? We got a nice number on the Huntress for Hire in the 13th on Friday.
Yes, it was Al.
Right?
It was Al.
He's been notorious. Masked Parade didn't show up, but he showed up last year. Al's pretty notorious coming back to Churchill for this weekend. Huntress for Hire paid $23.12, and that American Retro, because I it's funny, I kind of scuffled around all day Friday and then had a couple of walk-offs at the end of the at the end of the card. Pretty mischievous. That was a, how about pretty mischievous $20? That was a terrific scenario. Because to me, I could not have flogged her more. I mean, she looked better than any filly for the whole, at least the whole 2 weeks I was here. I mean, every single morning. And I'm kicking myself a little. Not that I let somebody else's opinion influence me per se, but I thought that Gambling Girl was gonna run well, and I I botched that. I sort of married myself to the, I wanted McPeak, defining purpose, I thought was the underneath key in yep. that in there. And she didn't really muster much of a, you know, she rallied a little bit.
And that was great analysis by Thorogriff in the Oaks.
Did keyed off of Pretty Mischievous?
Yes.
Nice.
And the horse who ran third.
Loved her. The Alley's look was absolutely a use.
Yeah.
And she was a crazy price.
She was like 30.
She was 30 to 1, which was bizarre. But you wouldn't think that, you would not have thought that, because it's not as if she was like a forgotten party in all of this. I mean, she got plenty, and she was getting plenty of conversation. That was also Javi. What a weekend for Javi. And by the way, when I see Javi next week, he buried the lead on me. I didn't know he was throwing the first pitch out yesterday. I got him on yesterday for a half hour, and he doesn't even mention that he's throwing out the first pitch. How about it? You know what? I tell you what. I watched him throw out that first pitch. I think they got to check the passport. He might be Dominican, not Venezuelan. Hey now,
which game did he throw out the first pitch?
The Yankees game.
I don't watch the Yankees.
Oh, ooh, I tell you what, they could have trotted him out and put him at second base or shortstop. There's a picture of him that I circulated. He's got the glove tucked and he's got the shoulder squared up beautifully. I mean, I was very impressed with Javi out there on the mound.
Good for him. That's great. That's he deserved it. He earned it.
Yeah.
He waited for it. And nice for the Delgados and that whole group. And that was a lot of fun. And we'll move on.
Well, let's move on. What else we got? We got a little HK.
Yes, we do. We have they're in the ring, so we're coming up on race six. Now, Hong Kong added another treble. So besides the last three races of the day, there was a treble today, 4, 5, and 6. And that will continue throughout. So two pick threes to choose from at Hong Kong. Last week it rained, so Sunday's race is at Sha Tin. We're on soft turf. We don't get that very often.
Yeah.
But we did. Today is all weather at Sha Tin. No Happy Valleys today. They're at Sha Tin, and all the races are on the all-weather track, playing very fast. They run fast times on this all-weather track. We go back Saturday night, not Sunday. So Saturday night, early Saturday morning, Friday night, West Coast time. Sha Tin has 10 races, all turf. And highlighted by a horse I squeezed in the other day, Beauty Eternal, who won the last race on the day where the three big stake races were a couple weeks ago. He's back, and he has improved his rating. He started out in October with the typical 52, which is where you start class four, and he's won 5 races. He's now up to 105. He was third in the Hong Kong Derby. He turns back to, I think, 1,400 meters, which he looks pretty unbeatable in that situation. So Beauty Eternal, another one, making his way up through the grades, about to become a serious stakes horse. And that would be great for him to join all the other ones. As Hong Kong has announced raising purse money for the Longines races, raising purse money throughout all of next year, 7-8%. So those Longines races in December are going to be worth, the cup will be worth $4.5 million, and the others will be $3.34 million. So serious money on those days and serious money on all the other days, including raising bonuses for class two and class three horses so that they want to attract not just the young up and comers that go through the development process, but also established horses that are going to come in, and if they win a couple of races and earn enough points, they can get $1 million Hong Kong bonus. So they're taking care of their constituents very, very well, and the response has been another terrific season of racing at Hong Kong. Two new riders are on the scene. Brent Avdala. Now, Brent has ridden in Melbourne. He's ridden New South Wales. He's won two Golden Slippers. He's ridden in Japan. So he has quite a varied background. He has a license, until the end of the season, July 14th. So he's looking to just get opportunities, show he can ride here. And if he can, he will try to get a license for next year. And then today, a young kid by the name of Ellis Wong, 10-pound bug boy, but Hong Kong takes young riders, puts them through their school, sends them overseas, sometimes South Africa, sometimes Australia. He's won 88 races in Australia. So he's not the 10-pound bug boy we see, where 10 pounds is really inexperienced. These are experienced riders that have proven themselves. Now they're in Hong Kong. And for now, he can only ride Sha Tin. He's not even able to race at the old quirky Happy Valley. But he'll be riding at Sha Tin for the rest of the year. You're getting 10 pounds. And when you look in the program, and if it says 135, he's getting 125. You got to kind of do your own math to subtract his apprentice claim. But Ellis Wong had about three rides today. He'll be back Saturday for a Sha Tin card where he should get some others. So he's interesting to watch. Angus Chung has arrived. He got through his 10 pounds. He's now 7 pounds, and he has a winner today. He is a good up-and-coming rider that's learning the ropes. And the other thing they do, Steve, not only do they train the riders, send them overseas, but when they come back, they're still being educated. Felix Katsia, a great South African rider, he's part of the training process. So there's always people helping them. The older riders want them to do well because, you know, they want everything to be safe and have them learn the rules and how to do and what, you know, stuff like that. So it's a really nice process. And as a bettor, you're getting 10 pounds off in handicap racing. With a young rider that already has a lot of experience. So I'll be looking at his mounts. And he's also going to be part of the Casper Found stable. So when Casper puts him on a horse, I'm sure he's been on him in barrier trials and things like that. So that'll be something to watch the rest of the meet.
Excellent.
So they're in leaving the walking ring for race six. I have a pick three ready.
Let's get it out.
I started out Saturday, the early pick four, and I had the first three. And they were all like, 3-1, 7-2, but it really spread the money out. So I had the pick four going 12 times and, ran second. I just, I don't know why I didn't use the winner.
Which race? In the fourth? And the fifth?
Yes. Yes.
You didn't use Fluffy Socks?
No. Nope.
Huh.
When you see me, bring a 2x4. You can...
No, I'll bring a pair of Fluffy Socks.
Knock someone.
I'm sorry.
I was just, you're just making decisions, and I just... Kind of unexplainable. It would have been nice to have that one 12 times because I had the runner-up 12 times. So.
Well, that which was would have been about $2,000 because it paid $360. So have it six times would be all right. That's the way.
Yep.
But that's the way to. It's weird because, as I said to a couple different people on during the handicapping sessions with Scully and Nick Tamaro in particular. It felt to me that Friday had, had the potential for more prices. I mean, you're always going to get a few surprises, and we did. Of course, I suppose the American Turf that scenario, I mean, you don't know what happens if talk of the nation runs, you know, but that was one of the good prices of the day, clearly. And, you know, the Matarea upset, quote unquote, the upset, the interesting way in which Errat Ortiz, you know, got taught a little comeuppance by the riders, but that wasn't a major. No balls for Ravelli. That I think some people are kicking themselves, realizing there really wasn't that much speed, and he was on the best part of that turf course with the rails down. But yeah, Webslinger and no balls were the two numbers on Saturday. Red Carpet Ready was a good number. Heavenly Sunday was a good number on Friday, right? I guess really it was about the same ultimately. You know.
Yeah. So I churned a lot of money and just what I needed the Angel to get second. Just couldn't do it. It was a lot of fun. I wish my neck had not gone out, but I just got a notice I can go to acupuncture again this afternoon. So.
Nice.
And then she did the electric stimulation through the needles. So.
Woo! You pay extra for that, Cotton.
I'm like, just turn the juice on. Don't worry about it. You're not hurting me.
Oh,
so it was good. And the woman I go to, I think she's fantastic. So
I love it. All right, where are we? We're 2 minutes to the post.
Yes, all right. We're going to start out with a 1,200 meter sprint for Class 3, pretty hard knocking group. I like the 1, Winning Icy. The 5 is the favorite, Gummy, right now, even money, and rightfully so. And then I'm going to throw in the 9, Everyone's Victory. Last two, Drew Post 11, Post 10, 1 from Post 10, which is a big effort. And he's had a couple of starts on the all weather and done pretty well on it. So 1, 5, 9 in race 6. Next race is 2 turns, class 3 again. Really wide open because there's a bunch of horses here in high single digits. I'm going to go with the 3, Arimo, John Size, number 4, Adafil, Ricky Yu. Now we got to overcome Post 11. But this horse does have speed, and he's just been in rare form. So I'll continue to stay with him. And number 11, Pegasus Hero, with the aforementioned Brent Abdullah. Go back 3 starts, and he just misses by a neck. His next 2 starts, he drew Post 10 and Post 13, going 1,600 meters at shot 10. So now he gets some post relief. And if he could run back to that prior race, I think he'll be an upset possibility. He was 17-1 earlier in the betting. So second leg, 3, 4, 11. And then the final leg, 6, 9, 11. The 6 is Apache Pass with Zach Purton. Zach already has a couple winners on the night. Then 9 is Handsome 12, a all-weather specialist who missed by a short head. 2 back as the beaten favorite tonight. Right now, it was about 5-1. And then number 11, Galaxy Witness from Casper Founds, has to overcome Post 10, but he's a deep one-dimensional closer, so I think he'll drop back early. And then Vincent Ho can crank him up, see if he can get up in time. So 1, 5, 9, first leg, 3, 4, 11 in the second leg, 6, 9, 11 in the third leg.
Another 3x3x3 for Dickie P. Let's take a look where we are. They're milling behind the gate. You know, that's a bit of an awkward placement. I never really noticed that, Dick. The gate placement for this configuration.
Yes. Yeah, they want to give some run to the first turn, but they back it up and they go.
All right. Getting close here.
Right over there at the 1200. There's Winning Icy at 8.2 and 1.8. Zarsun goes up. Favorite Gummy Gummy coming forward.
Winning Icy 7-1.
42 and 8. At the moment,
Gummy Gummy 4-5 and claim drawn. Everyone's victory 17-1. So it's a Chinese menu of prices.
Bianto ready. Everyone's victory.
Column A, column B, column C.
The gates and. Gummy Gummy's now 1.8.
Let's get that Mugu Guy Pan home.
Everyone's victory is ready. Mark the Moment goes in. Winning Icy is ready. Lightning Bolt will be the last. 1.6. Gummy Gummy. Crunched. All in. All ready. All racing. And Beato, a little slow from the centre. Flying Dragon goes back also. Manstar Classic Unicorn jump fast and Gummy Gummy's rushing up to join them. Purton wants the lead on the favourite, but he's being made work for it. Mark the Moment's gone up to be fourth now from Winning Icy, just dropping back to be fifth and in a good spot on the rail. As Gummy Gummy still being ridden hard to cross Classic Unicorn, he gets there now. And then Zarsun, Elon three wide and two lengths away, Flying Dragon. Everyone's victory, Lightning Bolt and Beato. The leader is Gummy Gummy, below the 600-metre mark, over Mark the Moment. Three lengths away, third Classic Unicorn, hard-ridden Manstar. Then came Elon, Winning Icy, Zarsun, Flying Dragon, everyone's victory, Lightning Bolt, and last of all, Beato. Leader is Gummy Gummy, Mark the Moment, sticking to him. Two lengths away is Manstar from Zarsun. Gummy Gummy, the leader, three quarters over Mark the Moment, then Manstar and Zarsun. Gummy Gummy, still the leader. He's a length over Mark the Moment. He's trying hard, but can do no better. Zarsun, Lightning Bolt, the next two, but Gummy Gummy, the favourite, wins, has beaten home Mark the Moment. Zarsun third, just in front of Lightning Bolt, who flew home for fourth. Then came Manstar. Everyone's victory.
Well, this ends up being a pretty kind of a tour de force by the favorite with the pressure that he saw early.
Well, Zach broke him and put him on the lead. He didn't hesitate to go up. His last couple of starts, that was not the strategy. But Zach gets back a podium. Last time, he was 10th in a deep stretch, rallied for second. This time, not playing around. Went to the front, just kept going and going. They challenged him, couldn't get by him.
All right, well, better than tearing it up. So
107.98.
Yeesh.
And they go fast on that. And they're listed as, you know, wet, slow, or I'm like, it's not really, it's a pretty fast track.
All right, 7th and 8th to come, 3, 4, 11, then 6, 9, 11 in the nightcap. Dick, feel better, and where are we going to see you? We're going to see you not until Belmont, or...
Well, what was disconcerting was I went down Wednesday. I was fine until we had a brunch with a bunch of Australian people Friday morning, and then this thing goes out for no apparent reason. So it's disconcerting that if my neck suddenly acts up, I'm like, well, what do I do now? If I'm home, it's no big deal. If I'm traveling, not good.
Yeah. So. All right.
Yeah, so I'm still getting my treatment. I'll be there today with the needles in me.
Well, best of luck. Thanks for terrific lead-up help for Derby. And was May, when we did the Derby, the four packs, was Mage one of yours? Or was it Seth? I think Seth maybe did Mage.
That's a good point.
I think Seth did Mage. Now, still great work, and we'll talk next week. Talk to you from Baltimore.
All right. Yes, thanks, Steve.
Dick Powell, everybody. HKJC. Two more at Sha Tin on the all weather. They do these cards. I don't know what, six times, maybe seven times a season. Rich Migliori is going to join us next. Looks like we'll take one break today. A little too much going on. Then we'll enjoy the post Derby. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus with Sid Fernando. Brought to you by The Farm, where the Derby winner's sire stands. Hill and Dale. Mig, I imagine, is so delighted for Javi. I mean, obviously, their careers, you know, Javi came in, you know, Rich had already been riding for I don't know how many years. In fact, he'll tell us right now. But I imagine that, you know, Richie understands what this means to Javier Castellano. They wouldn't have taken him out of the Hall of Fame had he not ever won a Derby, but it's sure nice to get one. And Rich, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I caught the tail end of what you were saying there. You know, the Derby doesn't define a career. Obviously, look at the body of work and you know what he's done. But I'm sure, you know, he's just over the moon and. You know, well deserved. And think about his record in the Travers.
Yeah,
going a mile and a quarter. I mean, obviously he knows how to rate one and you know produce them at the proper moment. But you know, I was having this conversation, and then I was texting with Angel Cordero, and you know, some of the riders we were talking about that never won a Derby that you know certainly very deserving. Manny Yakaza, you know. John Rotz, Eddie Maple, Corey Nakatani inducted this year, never won. There's so many. I mean, there's only, you know, every year they run one Kentucky Derby, and now there's every year 20 at least entered. I mean, it didn't work out that many ran this year, but one person or one group connection is going to go home happy, and normally 19 others are going to go home, you know, somewhat disappointed. Figuring out how can we get this done. But it's I think one of those things that you need the right horse doing well on the right day and with the right trip. And I thought this was a very nice result. You know, the people involved, you know, right away. I mean, I'm friendly with Romero Restrepo, and I was so thrilled for him. And you know, obviously Javier, I don't know the trainer, but he seems like a terrific person. I mean, I was reading about him for the America's Day at the Races show, and he won four triple crowns in Venezuela.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously a very world-class horseman.
Very much so. And the ability to, you know, to build stamina without, you know, without bullets on the work tab.
Well, yeah, and then that's an art in itself, you know, laying that foundation, getting the miles in them. Listen, full disclosure, he got by me. He slipped through the cracks in my, you know, pre-Derby handicapping. And I don't know why, because I did give Forte a chance before all the drama, you know, surrounding that. So if I gave him a good chance, why wouldn't I give him Mage? You know, just one of those things in hindsight, you can look at it and go, man, you know, you really weren't thinking as sharp as you'd like to believe you are. But man, he worked out a good trip after, you know, what is his want, a bit of a sluggish break. You know, it wasn't terrible, but it was, you know, he's just not handy away from there. But the move that Javier made within an eighth of a mile into the race, dive into the rail, you know, the conscious, thought out move that you can clearly see, and then working out the trip from there, you know, that contention, and this most good riders feel this way. If you're going to lose ground on one turn in a two turn race, you've got to save all the ground on the other turn. So being fully aware that, hey, once I get this horse kind of going, I'm probably going to be looking to get a clear path, tip out, not get stopped. So I got to save every inch on this first turn. And you know, he executed it. But you could see, I love when I watch riders and I see that clarity, that thought. You know what he's thinking and how he executed it. And you know, listen, the runner-up ran fantastic. I think Jareth Loveberry gave him a terrific ride. I know some people are like, well, he was so close to a fast pace. You know what? The horse is natural that way, and he took him there, and he saved every inch of ground, and he was calm. It wasn't like he sent them into the fray. And then when a hole presented itself, he took it. And what are you supposed to do in a big field? Wait until it's not there, and then you've got to, you know, peck and poke and look for spots? I mean, the horse ran a fantastic race, too. Great job by Larry Ravelli. I got to big kick out of when you had the owner. Is it Larry Stanton?
Anthony Sagan. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, you had them on, and, you know, what an incredible story that is. And I think there's a certain amount of racing gods getting involved with these things and great stories. And, you know, if there's one with your name on it or one with your, you know, your horse is supposed to run giant that day, it happens. I just thought, you know, despite everything else that went on, you know, the week leading up and then obviously, you know, Forte scratching and, you know, the horrible circumstances surrounding some horses and different things. All in all, I thought it was a terrific Derby and, you know, really cleanly run considering everything.
Well, and I said that to, I think, to Andy yesterday. It's amazing. I think I was with Andy. It's amazing that for the most part, and I guess it's because of the gate, you know, it's funny, driving in this morning, usually they store the 20-stall gate up the chute. And it just so happened that they had brought it around, you know, to the track supers, to the where the tractors come out on the clubhouse turn, and the 20 stall gate was there. And I should have taken a better picture. I just kind of leaned out the car window and snapped one. We're not going to have too many opportunities to see, you know, 21, 22, 23, on, or maybe we will, maybe with this scrutiny, maybe we will, see more 21s, 22s, 23s and 24, cause they're only going to ever have four AEs. But, I guess because they're so spread out and because there's always going to be horses based on their post position that are going to go, you know, going to go forward. And, you know, then there's just the naturally fast horses that whose intention is to be on or near the lead. It spreads the field out. And it's amazing how cleanly run this race actually is year in, year out. I mean, there's always going to be a couple of horses that have traffic and you know, the potential for a heel clip here and there. I mean, to be honest, when Loveberry went for the hole, it came very, you know, came very close to the backing up verifying. I mean, if you see the overhead, you'll see. I mean, his hind legs are, you know, right there. So, I mean, it's a high wire act, certainly, but it's amazing how cleanly run this race is year in, year out.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought he threaded the needle just right.
Yep.
And, you know, that's the thing. Like, you're in a position, you've got a horse coming back to you, a horse stopping on the inside of you, and you've got to make that split second decision. Do I, you know, kind of steady back a little bit, or do I, you know, go forward enough to sift into that spot? I mean, that was something Jerry Bailey used to do, you know, with precision. And, you know, I understand the thought, like, well, Two Fills was the only horse that was close to a fast pace and he hung in there, but you can't ask jockeys to get their position going forward and, you know, be aggressive and then complain when they get that trip. In a big field, I thought he got a terrific trip. Yes, in hindsight, you go, well, maybe if he wasn't as close to a fast pace, but I thought Loveberry gave him a tremendous ride.
No, the reality is, listen, he ran the best race, the most complete best race, and Mage, you know, Mage wins and was brilliantly handled by Javier. Two Fills, if they run this race, you know, 100 times, Two Fills and Mage are going to continue to win the majority of the races, a vast majority. The fact is that Mage would win less often than Two Fills. This is like the people who used to say, oh, Funny Side got lucky. No, he didn't get lucky. He's got speed to attend to pace, and he can finish. You put yourself in that position, you're going to win that race, you know, 6 out of 10 times. You take yeah. advantage of that. I mean, come on. It's I haven't seen anybody criticizing him. And I was live for a truckload. And I'm not unhappy.
Well, listen, I think if, you know, I was looking at it and thinking about it from, you know, a rider's perspective. If I rode the Derby and had, you know, horse, obviously, and rode that race, I'm going to win more Derbies with the ride he gave than I'm not. I thought kind of the same way you just framed it. I read something, and I don't like that. I hate when I see little ground swell of that kind of rumbling. And no. Let's get this right. Listen, the horse ran an amazing race. The rider rode a terrific race. Mage was very good. Overcame a little bit of adversity with the break, but did get an incredible ride by Javier. And by the way, Javier did throw out a very nice first pitch last night at the Yankee game.
How about that?
Let's not overlook that. I always say this, and it's uncanny to me, how many fantastic riders and baseball players come out of Venezuela.
Well, I said that, you know, I wasn't sure if he wasn't actually Dominican. That was my gag. That picture that the Yankees put up and that I commented on, I mean, he played baseball. He's played real baseball. I mean, the way he's got the way he's got that glove tucked and the way his shoulders are and chest is squared and the way he's where the ball is. I mean, that's not a guy that, you know, has never taken grounders and flipped a few double plays.
You know, and honestly, you know, all kidding aside, obviously I'm a jockey fan, right? So, you know, anybody could take this with a grain of salt. These guys and girls are just really good athletes in general.
Yeah,
I mean, you look at Manny Franco, at the jockey trainer basketball game in Saratoga. You know, it's hard for some people to see it, I guess, because they get lost in below average size people. But they're athletes. I mean, they're
pound for
amazing.
Pound. Right? Pound for pound.
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, I just had a flash of something when we said this because, you know, I can't believe this. I had a dream last night about George Velasquez, and he and Angel did that. Remember when ABC Sports had the athletes compete against each other, and they had tug of wars?
Battle of the network stars,
and they were both on it. And I can't believe you. Now, when you're talking and you go, "Wait a second," I had a dream about that last night with Georgie Velasquez. This is nuts. But anyway,
you're just thinking of that. You know, I do want to get because it came out yesterday, and I didn't see if anybody picked up on it and got the further details. But it came out yesterday with Shug because I had to ask him about the scratch of the gate scratch of Talk of the Nation, and you know, it happened so quickly and in such proximity, Rich, to the start of the American turf, that, you know, nobody really took everybody by surprise. And, you know, then getting the information, he explained that he never heard from stewards or from, you know, the KHRC or anybody about what the specifics were. But Tyler explained to him Sunday morning in a phone call how a pony buzzed and startled Talk of the Nation, and he sort of like shied and got his left leg kind of tied up with the pony's leg. And
wow.
The vet decides says to Tyler, "What happened there? What do you mean? Nothing happened there. The got startled and I got to look him over." And he just yanks the horse out of the race. And Tyler begged him not to. And I understand why the track vet, you know, why the state vets are you know, being hyper cautious. But what is your experience? And of course, it's we're dealing with a slightly heightened era versus, you know, when you would confront the track vets. But what do you say to track vets, Rich, when they start to ask you, you know, is there a problem here?
You've got to trust the professionals that work with the horses. The jockey's not going out there to ride a horse that's less than sound.
Yep.
I mean, it's already a dangerous job, and we're all very understanding of that, and you're not going to put yourself in more jeopardy. You know, anybody thinks that, oh, well, they don't care about the horses. Well, if they don't care about the horses, which is total BS, care about yourself. I mean, you know, what's happening here, and this is what I've been afraid of all along. I'm all for anything that makes it safer, better for the horses, and identifying people that maybe are going to push the envelope more. But when you're coming to, you know, riders like Tyler Gaffleone and trainers like Shug McGahey and things that happen like this, you can't let the people that want to end racing run the narrative here. And if you're given into that kind of pressure because of perception, not reality, perception, well, then that's where it's going off the rails, and that's where we're going to run into problems with this, and there's going to be pushback from both sides, and nothing's going to get accomplished in the fashion that it should get accomplished. And that's what I've been afraid of all along. You need to have clear-headed, common-sense people that are the best at what they do, so they have the strength of their convictions not to give in to the pressure of the people that don't want this game to exist. And that's what's happening. That's what's starting to drive the narrative.
Exactly. And we said that, in fact, even in advance of the, you know, the fatalities on Saturday, and as has been well established, it's a unusual collection of incidents from the paddock to the main track to different points on it to the turf course. It's obviously not a single spot and a single, you know, sometimes you get these clusters. We've discussed this, you know, many times. I mean, whether it was the Santa Anita cluster, the one at Aqueduct in 2010, there's been, you know, any number of these. This is different. This one's different.
No, and again, you know, people that are going to exploit, you know, things that go wrong, and you're dealing with large animals, and things do happen, and they happen out in the field, they happen in the wild, and it's much more gruesome of a fate when something happens. And I'm here to tell you, on my farm, horses in the backfield, cantering along, running around because they enjoy running, slipping, and getting caught up under a fence, and I'm knocking out boards to get a horse out from under a fence. He did it on his own. If I'm not there, he's not getting up. He's dead, right? But the same people that want to drive this narrative that we don't love our horses, we're cool our horses, we exploit our horses, we discard them when they're done. You know what? Put your money where your mouth is. Come to my place and look at the pasture ornaments I have. A horse that I won one race on 14 years ago it lives the life of Riley here. Trust me, I put a lot more money into this horse than I made that day riding him. And this... It makes me furious because any industry has bad apples. Any industry has people that don't do the right things that are in it for just profit or, you know, they don't have the love or passion for what they're doing. They're just what it can do for them. Every industry in every facet of life. I defy people to tell me that 99.5% of the people in our industry don't love horses. You don't get up 4 o'clock in the morning every day and take care of horses and think about them and figure out how you can make their lives better. You know, a horse has a personal valet, his groom. He's got a personal trainer, his trainer, and a guy who puts him to his pace in the gym, his exercise rider. He's got a manicurist that comes to the barn at least once a month to clip his nails. He's got a chiropractor that's in there all the time giving him a massage. He's got a massage therapist, then a chiropractor, then a doctor that makes house calls, a dentist that makes house calls. I mean, stop. It makes me crazy that people that don't know anything about horses or in reality don't know anything about what goes into, you know, taking care of these horses, cry the loudest, yell the loudest, stomp their feet the loudest, and they're the ones that get hurt. Maybe it's our fault. Maybe we're not proactive enough and present the story enough, with the same, ferocity that we get all this negativity. It makes me nuts. It absolutely makes me nuts. I'm sorry. I hope I'm making sense, but
well, we've had any number of these moments and discussions, and of course the people that are tuning in, we're all on the same page. What is sort of a new twist on this, which is kind of even more grotesque. I saw a couple of the condemnations now put into a prism of attacking the people who attend the races. It's not just the awful greedy owners and stakeholders. Now that I see the crosshairs being put on people who are attending. It's amazing. I mean, looking to critique people who enjoy the experience, who like to come and bet, like to come and socialize. Now they're no fucking good either.
Well, it's of course they're going to try to exploit any crack they see, right? So now this is the next thing. Let's turn these people, but. For all the people last year that I saw, you'd come in Saratoga and you had groups of PETA and they, these horrific posters are hanging up and they're screaming and yelling. There was a guy that had like this tartan cap on and he was out there with them. I saw that guy in the fifth race betting. He went in the races after he got his $20 for standing out there. And I confronted him and he dropped his head and ran away. I mean, the absurdity of it, they pay people to be out there and try to disrupt the day of racing. But where are they at 5 in the morning? Where are they at 6 in the morning? Get up at 7 and be on the backstretch and try to learn about it. But that might take an effort. Let's just espouse this rhetoric. Listen, can we do better? Always, constantly. We have to strive to do better constantly. And no one in our industry is going to argue that. But all of these applications of these rules, and they have to be applied clear-headedly with common sense. Remove the emotion and don't succumb to the pressure of what it may look like. I hate when things are done because of perception and not reality. If you want to make real meaningful change, it has to be to address the reality of things, not what other people think it looks like.
Well, of course, and we've said that. I mean, perception is perception; it's not reality. But you're dealing with an era where any possible distortion it is actually utilized as a propaganda tool. The right answers to all of this is when they say, "Oh, racing has to do a better job." Racing has done a better job. We've cut the number of incidents in half of catastrophic injury and fatality. We cut it in half, and it's this.
Listen, racing has done a much better job. But let me tell you something that happened years ago. I went to ride a horse named Royal Haven in the General George, and Royal Haven was a very good horse. Won a lot of races. He ran with two bar shoes, and if you didn't know Royal Haven, you probably wouldn't ride Royal Haven. The only time he felt good was going fast.
We talked about this last week.
Right, okay. And they wanted to take him out. And I talked to the vet and let him run. He won. That's not going to happen in this day and age. They're going to go, they're not going to trust the rider that's on his back that's known him for 2 years. And think about that. When these people know these horses intimately for years. They know the differences in them, the changes, what they're athletes. They are going to have to deal with certain amount of things, just like a human athlete is. And someone says, well, the difference is they don't get a choice. Watch horses and tell me they don't like to run. And then tell me that the horses that don't like to run identify themselves pretty quickly. and then they get other jobs. I mean,
that's true. Exactly.
You know, so you know that. Not now. Let's go in a different direction here. Monday night, I was in Saratoga, and it was great celebration of the sport.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful evening with people that have dedicated themselves to taking care of horses and breeding horses in the state of New York. The turnout was fantastic. The vibe was great. You know, we had a couple of technical difficulties, which I made fun of, and you know, I thought we got through and we had some fun, but. All in all, it was a tremendous evening of people that have a shared passion and love. And then the next morning, yesterday, I was on the backstretch all over both sides, even though there's no horses on the main track side yet, with a film crew. Craig Levitis, Mitch Levitis' son, is a filmmaker.
Oh, and there's another Levitis?
Yeah. He's what? Oh, Craig is what? What a great kid this is. Man, and he's a little more straight laced than his dad. I credit Mitch for broadcasting boot camp. When I first started doing television, I was doing the Dark Day simulcast shows on the NYRA network. You know, our marquee track today is Parks, and we've got Mahoney Valley, Finger Lakes. A little later on, we'll be bringing in Sunland Park and. I'd be like given the results, and the fifth at Parks is official. Steve Bick paid $886, and he's telling me a dirty joke in my ear while I'm, given the prices. Right, so you learn how to kind of block out what you don't need to hear and continue talking. I always credit him with broadcasting boot camp, but we had 3 hours out there yesterday morning, and we had the best time. And. Explaining them the history of Saratoga, the meaning of the racing there, and walked all over. I those poor guys, I had the guy with the camera, the guy with the boom mic, I think I wore them out. But he's doing a documentary on the history of racing, particularly centered around Saratoga. I know they're interviewing Angel Cordero tomorrow. We're going to get a couple current jockeys on Thursday. We have Twilight Racing, so we're going to do it in the morning. They're really, honestly, just I think it's going to be a terrific project, and I hope that the vision is realized, because I think it's going to, people will really see a side of Saratoga that even if they think they know it, they're going to learn things they didn't know.
Nice. Anything like that is always fun and welcome. Absolutely. Rich, a couple of other quick hits. Anything else from the coverage in the weekend and opening weekend at Belmont to augment?
I thought it was a tremendous weekend of racing at Belmont. Great to be back there. The turf courses look amazing and hadn't been used since last spring. So they had basically 9, 10 months with no use. So they're like in the best shape I've ever seen them. In all my years going to Belmont, thought the Sheepshead Bay was, you see by Manny Franco puts his filly on the lead. They went a half and 54 and change, three quarters and 23, and they come home the last 8th and 11th. So you can't say the course was soft, right? They went the same exact fractions that Virginia Joy did last year, but pretty close fractions to Virginia Joy last year. And they still ran 7 seconds faster. So it tells you the bog it was run on last year and the firm course it was this year. And I've never seen a race run that slowly in North America early. Now, obviously, four horses, two trainers, and, okay, well, I don't want you to go to the lead and bother the other horse. And everybody kind of galloped around there, and then they sprinted home. I think that's honestly something I think that needs to be addressed. Horses need to run completely and fully on their own merits.
Yeah. Rich?
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it.
Well, I'm, like I said, glad to be back at Belmont, heading back down Thursday morning, and been busy, Steve, very busy.
Well, you said you had that little late winter kind of pause, and that was going to, the train was going to pull out of the station, and it's done that.
Well, I'm heading out to finish taking care of my horses. If anybody that doesn't like racing or doesn't like people that like horses, you're welcome to come muck a stall. We'll even hand you a curry comb and a brush, and you can help me groom these horses this afternoon.
It won't be today. I'm headed down to Nashville.
Oh no, you like it. I was inviting these fanatics that are trying to end our industry.
Exactly.
Hey, be careful what I wish for. People would be lined up at my gate. I'll have to get out my shotgun.
Rich Rigliori, everybody. Meg, thanks a lot.
Have a good day. Bye.
There we go. There's Meg. I just heard from Rusty, who is on a plane. He got an early flight, so that's why we lost Rusty. Let's take the break here, Case. Let's head to a break. We're about 15, 20 in, and we'll come back. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And I do want to slip this in, and I've reached out to a couple of people potentially to pay tribute while we're here in the Ville. And you probably know where I'm going with the specification of being in Louisville. And this reminds me slightly of being in New Orleans when Tom Benson passed. But word came yesterday, and it wasn't unexpected because he's been ailing, that Denny Crump passed at, I think, 86, I think. And I've talked about this before at the expense of, frankly, at the expense of UK fans. But when I came to the Midwest to Cincinnati in 1982, you got to take certain stands. You come to Cincinnati, you're either a Bearcat fan or a Musketeer fan, Cincinnati or Xavier. And you start to, you start to go to college basketball games and take an interest, and you're a Cardinal fan or a Wildcat fan. And I was instantly a Cardinal fan and a Denny Crump fan. And it's funny somewhat because I was never a UCLA fan. And of course he famously was really, I think he was the top assistant of John Wooden. You can hear, I'm going to laugh, because if you're picking a favorite, you're preferring one program to another, and Joe B. Hall is on one side and Denny Crum is on the other, I'm sorry. You're gravitating to Denny Crum. This is, I'm sorry. That my introduction really to, to UK and the Ville was that. And I'm living in Cincinnati, and it's like, oh, this is Joe B. Hall. Billy Tubbs, another guy. You instantly didn't like Oklahoma just because, ugh. Don't get me started on Beheim. Seth will be on later. But Denny Crum was not just his accomplishment with the program and his savvy as a basketball coach, but was a friend of the game and a frequent and high-profile fan, proponent of thoroughbred racing as well. And in fact, maybe Dallas, if Dallas has got time, we'll get Dallas Stewart to pay tribute to. Maybe Scotty Davenport might be a candidate too. Pat Ford. Denny Crum, rest in peace. Back after this, second half at the races. Sid Fernando next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with...